Welcome to the show, guys. Today we're joined by Chris Sassons, who's Head of Digital Transformation at Berenberg. It's great to have you join us today, Chris. I hope you pronounced Berenberg right.
Hi, Ben. Yes, thanks for having me on. You said it exactly right. It is Berenberg. Yes.
Okay, excellent. So I think, you know, just to get the ball rolling before we get into the main conversation here, it could be quite a good idea if you gave us a bit of insight into Berenberg and your role and what your role entails as Head of Digital Transformation.
Yeah, sure. So it's one of Europe's leading private banks. I come on to the private part in a sec, but it's actually was founded in 1590, so it's also one of the oldest banks in the world. It's got 14 offices around the EU, another four across the US, and it's made up of, say, sort of like wealth management, corporate banking, investment banking, and other areas like shipping. And really, it started out, and it still is, a very large wealth management side to it. That's really how most people, especially in Germany, have heard of it. What it's really well known for in the UK is really more in its investment banking arm. And around about the credit crunch time, because it's a private bank, it's run by partners. So it's not really geared towards like normal banks where every quarter they have to present results and things like that. A private bank can plan more long-term, can be counter-cyclical, and it can make more, I suppose, more fast decision-making requests, you know, compared to, say, its peers. Anyway, so around about the credit crunch, they decided to invest a lot more in the investment banking side, and they built out one particular area, which was the equities area. And within that area of equities, like you've got trading and things like that, there was one area as well, which was sales and research. And sales and research is really where we talk to clients, and like an investment, like a pension fund. And we will tell them what companies we recommend you should buy or sell. And we've got a very, very large coverage of these companies. So you could be Vodafone, it could be Barclays Bank, it could be anything really. And we'll provide them this opinion. Now, what's so interesting is that between the credit crunch and now, we've got now one of the largest coverages in such a small time frame out of any bank across the Europe. So that's quite an achievement. So with that comes a lot of data. And so where I come in is really to be able to support the bank and take on all of that data, so for clients to be able to find and access in a really, really easy way. So where I've been involved in sort of is to help sales and research provide all of that data to clients.
Excellent. I mean, so how long have you been in the industry for, would you say?
I've been in the industry, well, I've been in IT industry since 2000. But I've been working for financial services since about 15 years.
Okay. Yeah. So would you say that you had quite a linear route into financial services, or how did you break into that?
I think everyone I talk to, with the way that they come in, they're always coming in all sorts of different ways. So there's no linear way, really, which is great. Actually, I think that's fantastic. Everyone's got a different experience. They bring a different skill sets and background to it. So that's great. I started out when the dot-com bubble started, and I had got a biology background, and I came out and I got on a grad intake with a company based down in Bristol where they were building out really, really big systems for the police forces and for CPS. And they were building these huge monolithic systems. I remember rocking up and they would have hundreds and hundreds of pages of specifications that you look through. And it would take half an hour for the printer to finish, you know, doing what it was going to do. And then you'd sit there and have to read this stuff. And by the time you got through it, and by the time you've implemented it and then put it in somewhere, and after months and months of planning a release, it was probably too old by the time it got actually live. So it was a real learning curve and a real, really good chance to sort of see something really, really big getting built. And also the advantages and disadvantages of a monolithic system, really. So from there, I suppose I then had a chance to switch over and I joined a startup, which was sort of biomedical. So I had my chance to use biology. And there it was totally the opposite.
Right.
It was a startup. You were just on your own, you know, really small teams. You could do anything. You could get the job done. It was really great, you know, and I loved it. I was doing crazy long hours, but I just loved it. I just got really into it. And we were building these web engines for biomedical websites so that crazy scientists with, you know, journals that they want to publish and research reports that they wanted to publish, they could come to us and we could get it up and running. We were running like 150 different sites with a really, really small team.
Wow.
This was way before WordPress or anything else was going on. So that was really cool. And then I suppose only from that point, really, I had an opportunity to then get into banking and financial services. So I guess my background was very different to anyone else's as well. So there's no linear way to get in.
So I'm thinking now about, you know, graduate intake, because if you work in, if it's a technology space they're looking to go in, the world of tech is so, it can be so glamorous these days, you know, with startups and all these amazing things that are happening. So I'm just curious to find out what the grad intake is like for this industry now.
Thanks. I think it's important to try and remember that there are a lot of people out there that are obviously trying to break into IT in general, or even into IT and banking. And the grad intake systems for wherever they are a really good way to be able to do that, because they're very structured. Berenberg is, like many other banks, and it has its grad intake scheme. And we gear around two different areas. One is either on IT, and the other is within the business. So within IT, we've got 12 spots every year that we take them on, and we've got 25 for the business as well. And you get looked after by HR, you get pulled in, you get to do rotations across the entire bank. And if it wasn't for COVID, unfortunately, this year, in previous years, what would happen is that you get a chance to be able to work in different offices as well. And you get to work in all sorts of different places. Like, if you want to work in trading, then you come and work for us within research and sales. You might then go and work on the hotline. And although you may not have a particular interest to begin with, it's invaluable to be able to learn about how across the bank, how that's all working.
Absolutely.
And then at the end of it, then you get a chance to be able to do your certifications. So if anyone gets a chance about doing a grad intake, I think they must just jump on it with both hands.
That's really interesting. It sounds like it's a really kind of solid place to start your career, really.
Yeah, definitely. And that's how I started out. I mean, when I first started out, I had a chance for first year to have an opportunity to work across this particular company I worked at. And same goes for Berenberg. You know, we always have these grad intake schemes. So all the better, I suppose, in this current climate, as well as, you know, to be able to have a have schemes like this, where it's not so easy to be able to interact with people, like, you know, unless you've got Zoom, and even then it's kind of difficult to be able to build up a culture. So yeah, the grad intake schemes are really quite good.
Would you say the grad intake scheme that you have is quite unique to, you know, other industries?
Yeah, I would say, because I think I'd see it from two different angles. One is on the business side, and then on the IT side. And on the IT side, I would say, yeah, you've really got a chance. So maybe other grad schemes would be focused around a particular aspect of the bank. Maybe, whereas here, we allow you to work in investment banking. You can work in wealth management. You can work in corporate banking. You really would get a chance to work at what is known as an investment bank. Whereas maybe other places, you might not necessarily get that chance. And again, coming back to the fact that we are kind of a private bank, we're not under so many constraints, I would say, as maybe some of our peers.
Definitely. So I'm just thinking, you know, if you've been in this particular industry for 15 years now, and obviously you're a manager now, so I'm interested to find out how you've developed your managerial style?
I never really sort of took a book and had a look and followed a book. I was much more of the approach of learning as you go. And I'm also a big proponent for people, you know, that it's okay to make a mistake. I've learned the hard way by, you know, sort of over a long course of time, learning first with a small team and then building it out and then working with different teams across different locations and understanding different cultures and different ways that people want to work. And just, I suppose I would say that my first lesson would probably be to just listen, just to, you know, people, the way that they do things. Everyone really does want to make things work. You know, no one's actually against anything. They really want to make it work. So take the time to listen to what their worries are and act out as well. If you're going to say you're going to do something, definitely act on it. That's one of the things I also learned as well. If you miss it once, maybe twice, you know, where somebody asks you to do something and you promise that you're going to do it and you don't. Once is okay, but if you do it a few times, people lose the trust in you. So it's really important. So to answer your question, I guess, no, there was no set path or course or mentor or buddy system. No, I had to just learn it as I went along.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And I found that, you know, people have seen bad management and a lot of people try and just do the opposite of that from what they've experienced in their life. Would you say that that's happened to you as
well? Yeah. Well, I think that when it comes to bad management, if you've got good management running around you, you probably don't realize it. You know, everything's running, it's okay, you can focus on what you're doing. But you definitely know when there's bad management going around.
Yeah, definitely.
You just can't help it.
Yeah.
And I guess there's more lessons to be learned from when you see bad management happen. You can sort of pick up on that much quicker. Whereas if it's good management, I suppose it's more subtle about picking up on it. And I guess if you've got the chance to be able to go across a diverse range of different areas like I have, so I went across from a startup to monolithic system and then into banking. So, yeah, I had a chance to be able to see the way different companies work. Even similar companies in the industry, no two companies are the same. They could be doing the same kind of product for clients, but the way they work inside is just completely different. You see that the same as well in other places. So if you get that chance to be able to learn across different companies, you know, that is even better.
Yeah, and one of the aspects of good management is enabling their team to be able to do what they do best and kind of almost step back. And it almost makes me feel that managers can often be the unsung heroes of an organization. I mean, would you agree with that?
Yeah, I would. You remind me of a quote that I heard from Richard Branson, which he said that he tries to surround himself by a lot of people that are much, much better than him. Part of the challenge, I suppose, if you come from a background where you've been a programmer or in IT and you're moving into management, is you still want to have that connection with the past. You still want to use the skill sets that you used to rely on. And the trick is to just don't get in the way. You've got a lot of people who are very keen around you that are sometimes really, really good at what they do. So let them just get on with doing it. Have the trust in them. They've got the trust in you. So, yeah, just step back. I completely agree. Yeah,
yeah, it's interesting. It is almost a lot of it is to do with trust. But then I'm also, you know, the idea of hiring the right people as well. So how do you go about hiring people and making sure that they're right for the business? Do you look for more of a cultural fit or is it strictly a technical fit?
Yeah, both are important. Yes, culturally and technically. I mean, I think certainly the technical fit is probably the priority. You're looking for somebody that can find the technical aspects of what you're doing. And I think that as time goes by, there is more demand on people to have more skill sets. You know, in years gone by, they would just be a database guy or they would just be this programmer who knew one language. And unfortunately, those days have sort of passed now. You have to have more, unless you're really, really good at one thing, and I mean really good, then you have to be more of a polyglot. You have to have several different skill sets in your arsenal. But yeah, culturally too, I'd say that that's really important. I mean, take, for example, not just culturally, but getting more women into IT. That's a great thing, you know. I really, part of the grad intake is I'm seeing more and more, you know, women coming through. There weren't so many when I was doing my degree, and that's great. And more diverse backgrounds, that's equally important, I think, you know, it's a more diverse place that we live in. So, yeah, and we're all better for it. Because I think you definitely notice the difference in what you get out of it. You know, you get more people with different ideas and to bounce different ideas as well. And you'll see the success come out in the product.
Mm. So, you know, if someone was looking to get into the industry, you know, for the first time, would you say from a managerial perspective that expectations of those new employees are higher than they ever have been previously?
Well, if you take from the banking point of view or financial services, I would say that you wouldn't necessarily need financial services experience or banking experience, not all the time, not unless you were going in to do trading, something specific around the business. But if you're talking about IT, I think those days have sort of passed now, where I think banks especially, they look for more, you know, of a background where maybe you might have been working in media or biotech before or something else. And it actually helps the bank because you're bringing, you may not understand necessarily the banking aspect, that can be learned, but you are bringing another set of skills to bear that the bank can make a big use of, whether it's the cloud or certain databases. And I think that's the future as well. I think that's only going to become more so. But to break into banking itself, I think that the boundaries have been cut down a lot compared to when I first started. So I think there's a lot more opportunity. You don't need a particular skill set with banking itself. It's the technology aspect that we really are.
Mm, that's really good to hear. You know, is there anything in the industry that, you know, concerns you? Is there anything you've noticed that is a concern of yours that, and if so, how would you, if you have experienced it, how have you overcome it? Or how would you overcome it, should I say? That was very bad.
Yeah.
That was very badly worded.
I get what you mean. Concerns. Yeah. I mean, I think it's not banking. It's always had this, this cliche around it, you know, banking was boring and it's very, that's a hard thing to try and shrug off. And it's still, there's still a lot of truth in that. You know, we are heavily regulated, and quite rightly. There's a lot of regulatory stuff that we have to take care of that may not be immediately apparent. And if you're just coming into the industry, and I get this a lot, I get this so much, where we get new people coming in and they go, well, why can't I just spin up something from AWS? Or, you know, why can't I do that? And I'm sorry, but you just can't do that in the banking industry. You have to stop and think about exactly what you're going to actually do here. You could have something that's going on in London, but you're being stopped to do it because the regulator in another country has actually got a problem with what you're doing. So that there's those sort of things. So I guess I would probably try and summarize that to say that it's the impression of what banking is. That's my concern. And I think it's always getting better. I think that there's a lot of reward and there's a lot of benefits of joining the banking system. You know, it sounds a lot more cool and fun if you wanted to go and work at a media agency or something else like that. You know, it's a bit more, it's easier to sell. So that's the hardest concern I think I actually have around banking, is trying to get people to understand is how well connected we are with what goes on in the world, you know. Take, for example, yesterday, was it yesterday or Monday, when we heard about the COVID results that came out, you know, and boy, oh boy, did the stock market go alive, you know, and that influences us all, you know, we're all connected to it. So it's just having that understanding about how banking ties in with everything.
Mm, it's actually a huge, almost organism, isn't it? And you've made me realize how interesting banking actually can be. And actually, if you're looking at it from maybe your first role, it's really, really safe, it's really solid, and there's a lot of different areas that you can go into from it. So I'd fully recommend to, you know, look into it if you're new into the industry.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, and you would get a chance to see, you know, systems, a real diverse range, you know, from non-trading, which is what I typically cover, to stuff that where we sit next to people in a couple of other bays down in our office where they're working on trading systems. And the technologies that go into those systems these days are incredible, absolutely amazing, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, so obviously the technology nowadays is incredible, like you were just saying. But how does that differ to, say, 10 years ago, or even as little as 5 years ago, or even last year? I mean, how quick are the developments, and how big are they?
Yeah, it's only getting faster as well, Ben, I would say. You know, in where was it? 15, 20 years ago, and I was working on monolithic systems where the release cycle was measured in half years. And now it's, you know, we tend to do releases in our systems now more or less as and when we like. The changes are, you know, mostly around some of the, you know, the buzzwords that most people use these days, which is really around DevOps or the agile approach. There's a ton of different technologies, but I would say that DevOps and agile have been the two biggest changes recently that really have made a big difference, especially on the way that the business see how they can see the results come through. It's empowered a lot of technology people to be able to have that responsibility now. So they look after the entire product as one. And there was that famous quote from Jeff Bezos, which says, you know, you only should have a team size that's big enough, what is it, for two pizzas or something like that? You know, and people... Yeah. People understand that. So you can cut a team up into small enough, so no more than, say, 9. That, along with DevOps and Agile, it's really, really makes you focus on what product you're actually building. And you can build a really good one. So AWS, for example, I remember seeing this diagram of all the services that were running inside AWS, and it was so scary. I mean, when you look at it, it looked like a massive spider's web,
yeah.
But each one of those dots was a different team running it, you know. And those days, if you look back 5, 10 years, 15 years ago, I don't think that would have just wouldn't have been possible without the sort of DevOps and Agile approach that we've got going today.
Yeah, and where do you think? I mean, this is a difficult question, but where do you think the future of this industry is going to be in a couple of years' time?
I mean, I'd say a couple of things on that. The one I can think of is there will be more of this demand on people to be more of a polyglot, you know, this idea that they can do several different skill sets as wearing several different hats. So DevOps is probably a good point, a good example of that, where you might not just be a programmer, but you're also taking care of doing the releasing and the deployments. So that's one area. There's a lot of talk about the cloud, and I would say that probably the way it's going to go is you probably will have an aspect of that, but you're going to have these sort of hybrid systems where it's sort of one foot in one camp and one foot in the other. And banking is a really good example of that, because you can only have certain things running in the cloud and some of it has to be on premise. So you end up having this sort of mix, and that sounds quite challenging because that technology wise. So I think that will become more, it'll happen a lot more. You'll see that going on. And the other thing I think it's also been quite an interesting that's been taken. Lots and lots and lots of different systems have been set up within companies. And because you've got these like microservices, all of these different systems running, it's become more and more of an interesting challenge as to which one is actually the golden source, as it were, for certain bits of data. Who's running the thing? So this has been an interesting thing for me, because it's also known as like single source of truth or some things like that. And I think that there's a lot of interesting technology coming out around that, so that who, you know, eventually when you get down to it, when somebody sends a message from system A to system B, it's the message itself that's actually the golden source, and it gets passed around to everywhere else to be able to pass it around. And it's like that little packet that ends up being the really, really important bit. It's not the database behind it or the, you know, the guy that sends through the system. It's we've gone back to the old ways, like the Royal Mail. You know, you send it between A and B. It's actually the letter that's the most important thing that's going on here. So I think that's going to be the bit that's going to be more interesting as in the next couple of years.
Mm. You know, you were mentioning the letter that's the important part, essentially. Do you think, because tech developments are coming out left, right and centre, do you think sometimes people forget that aspect?
Yes, I think that's a very, very... I think a lot of people will look at a problem and they'll say, what technology can we use here? And the it's a real... It catches people out because you shouldn't do that. You really, you should, what you should look at it and say is, what problem are we trying to solve? Because there really is so much technology out there now to fit whatever you need. You don't really need to worry about the technology anymore. You need to think about what particular problem you're focusing on. And I suppose as a very quickly another way of seeing it, I've seen in the past, people want to learn a particular technology and they learn it and then they go mad and they over-engineer something and it really becomes quite a scary thing to look after. And I suppose one of the lessons learned for people if they're having to manage this stuff in the future, not just people but also systems, is just keep it simple. Because once you've built that system, you're going to have to look after it. So, you know, don't over-engineer it and don't look at these real sexy technology things that you think would be great to do. Focus on what the actual problem is and finish that off, because there'll be plenty of other problems to solve as well after that.
So I'm just thinking, you know, maybe to wrap up, one final question. What's the best or greatest piece of advice you've been told that's really had an impact on your career, if you have one?
Yeah. I would say probably don't be afraid to make mistakes. And don't be afraid to speak up. I think I was quite a shy person, you know, going through learning about technology. And I think you might underestimate your, you know, how good you might be, actually. So if you maybe got an idea or you think, actually, that might not work. I remember myself thinking those thoughts, but never saying anything. And then later, actually, those problems occurring or something going wrong. So don't be afraid to speak up. And equally, it's okay to make a mistake, but just if you do, tell someone about it. Don't go quiet. And then you can learn from those lessons. It's okay. So I think those are two most important lessons. That, and definitely keep it simple. It's probably the three things I would say to people that are coming through into the industry.
Brilliant. Amazing advice. I've really enjoyed chatting to you today, Chris. Thanks so much for coming on the show. And
thank you, Ben.
Taking the
time. It's been a pleasure to come on.
Yeah, excellent. Thanks for listening to Venturi's Voice. If you like the show, give us a follow on your favourite streaming platform.